Anyway, if we look at the Christmas story, as no doubt we've been doing, I don't know where you've been over the last few weeks, really, but if you look at the Christmas story, there's a lot about light and dark in it. The birth of the baby Jesus happened in the hours of darkness, in the gloom of a stable. The shepherds witnessed this sort of angelic announcement that suddenly burst into the inky blackness of the hills around Bethlehem in a blaze of light. The Magi, or sometimes we call them wise men, noticed a bright new star and followed it until it had guided them to Jesus. Speaking some hundreds of years in advance, the prophet Isaiah had said these words: "People walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned." Elderly and devout Simeon, holding the 8-day-old baby Jesus, declared, "For my eyes have seen your salvation, which you have prepared in the sight of all nations, a light for revelation to the Gentiles, and the glory of your people Israel." And then John, writing later than the other evangelists, and pondering the impact, the significance of Jesus' birth, wrote, "The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it." John is clearly using words light and darkness to mean something else, something of other significance, perhaps a more significance, well, I'm sure of more significance than physical light and dark. And when a little bit later on in the gospel, John records that Jesus calls himself the light of the world, it obviously didn't mean that Jesus went around glowing like a beacon or a torch. Though once for a short while at the Transfiguration, he did indeed glow. His face shone like the sun and his clothes became as white as the light. But that leaves us with the question, what then did Jesus mean? What way is Jesus the light of the world? In ordinary speech, we often associate light with knowledge or understanding. Throwing light on the subject is an expression we use when we come to something that we don't understand. And yes, Jesus throws light on our understanding of God and of the world and of ourselves. But for certain, it's much more than a matter of knowledge. There's another expression: "I can read you like a book." And John opens his gospel, he begins this prologue by referring to Jesus as the Word. And we said those words, didn't we, at the beginning together. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. I can read you like a book. We can read Jesus. We can listen to his words through the gospel writers. We can understand his messages. We can see his activity, and in him we see God. And Jesus, we see God and we have met God. That's a key message from the Gospel of John. Now, for us who live in the Northern Hemisphere, in contrast to these New Zealanders who are at our centre this week doing their New Zealand Christmas, we have our Christmas at a dark, gloomy, damp time of year. And we get to its darkest point and past that. That's the 21st of December, of course, the shortest day. Also Pat's birthday and our second son, Stephen's birthday, so special day in our household, this shortest day of the year. When we get sort of to that point, darkest point in the year, what do? We turn on the lights. We have Christmas in a blaze of light in the dark days of our year. And Christmas, of course, is first and foremost a celebration of the coming of God's Son, Jesus. And this message, and this is one of two phrases I'd like you to sort of take away from this service this morning, and let it sort of work through your mind as we approach the new year and into the new year. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. So we were thinking a few minutes ago as we came to prayer, there are dark forces in our world. There is malevolent force, there is corruption, there is warfare, there is violence, there's inhumanity, there's suffering, there's displacement, there's all sorts of trouble and difficulty and darkness in our world. And the coming of Jesus says to us, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. Listen for a moment to these words. They're lyrics. You can tell me in a moment if you recognize them. It's Christmas time. There's no need to be afraid. At Christmas time, we let in light and banish shade. And in our world of plenty, we can spread a smile of joy. Throw your arms around the world at Christmas time. But say a prayer to pray for the other ones at Christmas time. It's hard, but when you're having fun, there's a world outside your window, and it's a world of dread and fear, where the only water flowing is the bitter sting of tears, and the Christmas bells that ring there are clanging chimes of doom. Well, tonight, thank God, it's them instead of you. Anybody recognize where those lyrics come from? Band-Aid, absolutely right. 1984, Band-Aid, Geldorf and others, with the sort of stars of the day, produced this with the hope of raising £70,000 and raised £8 million. That sold faster than any disc and became the best-selling disc ever until I think it was passed in 1997. It sold 1 million copies in the first week, was released on the 3rd of December 1984, and by the end of the month it passed 3 million. So it's words that a lot of people have heard, and they're telling, aren't they? And they do actually echo, don't they, the words that we've read in John's Gospel, except for that nasty twist at the end of that section of those lyrics. Well, this year also for you, and your family, that might have brought some gloom, some darkness. We've been thinking about that earlier on with the work of Torch and the literal darkness really coming into the lives of people who are losing their sight. But it's not just about that literal darkness, it's about the darkness that infects the inside, that gets inside of you, that gets hold of your soul. And here is the message of Christmas for you today. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. So we approach the new year, there's plenty that challenges us. The light shines in the darkness. The darkness has not overcome it. The gloom seems endless, but actually the message of John's Gospel is that the light is everlasting, truly, and is transcendent. Jesus encountered and confronted the darkness in the world. And that includes the darkness inside of us. Looked for a moment upon the cross, that the darkness had in fact won out and overcome the light. But the resurrection quickly established that despite those appearances, the light has overcome the darkness. Jesus said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." Light and dark is a theme that runs through the whole of John's Gospel, about seeing and blindness in a metaphorical sense. Sometimes, particularly in John chapter 9, in a story about a man born blind, this emerges. It emerges over and over again through the Gospel. He wrote the prologue, I guess, like... Well, you can sort of imagine, can't you? I think he would have written that prologue after he'd written the Gospel, you know, to then introduce it to the readers. I don't know. I haven't researched that. That's just my own feeling about it. And you can see as the Gospel unfolds that repeated reference to light and sight, to darkness and blindness. This is the verdict, says Jesus in John chapter 3. Light has come into the world, but people love darkness instead of light because their deeds are evil. Then, as I say, John chapter 9, a whole chapter, a story about a man who was born blind and is encountered by Jesus. There's a lot in that story, and I'm often talking about that story fairly obviously in the sort of things that I do. But it's quite interesting how it ends. Jesus sort of challenges this man who's now got his sight and says to him, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" Code for the Son of God. "Do you believe I am the Son of God?" "Who is he, sir?" the man asks, "so that I may believe in him." And Jesus says, "You have now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking with you." Of course, that's the point of John's theme here, isn't it? Because his concern is that through his gospel, that people come to see Jesus, and in seeing Jesus, meet with God, recognize that Jesus is himself God. But the Pharisees were listening into this conversation going on, and Jesus made some other comments which I won't read to you now, but it finishes this way with the Pharisees, the religious leaders of the day, saying to Jesus, "What? Are we blind too?" So the challenge is coming to them that they actually might not be seeing what was really important, which the blind man had. Chapter 12. "The one who looks at me is seeing the one who sent me," says Jesus. "Look at me, you'll see the Father." Philip asked Jesus to show them the Father. "Show us the Father and that will be enough for us," says Philip to Jesus. Jesus says, "Don't you know me, Philip? Even after I've been among you for such a long time, don't you get it? Anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, 'Show us the Father'?" Now I'll skip right toward to the end of the Gospel, to chapter 20. There's this scene, the resurrection, where Mary thinks she's speaking with a gardener. And then Jesus says to her, Mary names her, and she turns towards him and cries out in Aramaic, "Rabboni." She has recognized Jesus, her Lord or teacher. And then there's Thomas. Thomas, who won't accept the words of these disciples, these men that he spent 3 years with. He won't accept their word that they've seen Jesus risen, except unless I can see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe. week later, the disciples are together again, and Thomas is with them this time. And Jesus comes and stands among them and says, "Peace be with you." And then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here, see my hands." I've just done the British Sign Language sign for Jesus. And as I've perhaps said here before, it's as if Jesus is saying that Thomas is blind, because this is exactly what a blind person want to do. Put your finger here, see tactile in that sense. Thomas recognizes at last, this is the real living Jesus, the Son of God. "My Lord and my God," he responds. And then Jesus says, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen, yet have believed." I'm sure that's what John wanted to happen as a consequence of writing this account for us. We have a choice at Christmas time. So we witness the arrival of the baby Jesus. We see Jesus and come to recognize that in seeing him, we are seeing God. We have a choice to recognize him and to allow that light to shine into our hearts. We have a choice to allow that light into the darkest corners of our hearts, into our very soul, into our motives and our darkest thoughts, to illuminate us, to dispel darkness and to drive out evil. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. Victory for the light is assured. Maybe you're wrestling with this for a first time, I suspect, not looking around the room. Maybe come to this place many times of making that choice to allow the light to shine into your heart, into its darkest recesses, to penetrate our souls and drive back out the darkness that has seeped in. Let's, at the end of this year, the end of 2015, determine to do that again, to allow the light to come in to every corner of our lives. We have a choice to let the light in so that the darkness may be overcome. Jesus said, we read this in Matthew's Gospel, that we are the light of the world. I've been thinking now about how that light comes into the world and the darkness has not overcome it, how it comes into our lives and illuminates our lives and drives out the darkness. But we're light to the world. We have a role, a Jesus-like role of being light to our world. Now, here's a funny thing. The coming of the light of the world, Jesus, may have been announced in the brilliance of an angelic sound and light show. The only people to see it were a few shepherds. His arrival may have been heralded by a super bright star in the sky, but the only people who took notice was maybe just three wise men who responded and made the journey. God's plan was to get the maximum publicity for the arrival of his son. It didn't work very well. But when we look at the significance of this Christmas story and its impact on the world, I think it tells us something really important. This is the second thing that I want you to remember, is don't underestimate the light. Don't underestimate the light. Sometimes seems that the efforts of the churches to gain attention for Jesus, even at Christmas time, seems that it goes almost unnoticed in the clamour for the tenors and plastic in our pockets that goes on. You know, it is the commercial dollars, the retail pounds that pay for the advertising that bombards us as we approach Christmas time. The vivid LEDs puncture the darkness with their sort of clinical precision, rather humbles the Advent candles at the church. But God works in mysterious ways. The message is, don't underestimate the light. Just because the audience is small or unimpressed, Jesus' arrival changed the world like nothing else ever has. And the problem still is that very few people seem to notice. I've had little encouragements in the last few days as Christmas has approached. Bear Grylls on the television, taking President Obama, anybody else see this? Taking President Obama on a walk in the wilderness in Alaska. And at the end, and they didn't edit out, they left it in full, and it was a bit controversial in the papers the following day. At the end of the time with President Obama, as he's about to be whisked away in his helicopter, he says to the president, "Can I pray for you?" And they showed the whole of that episode in the broadcast. Program looking back on the Royal Christmas broadcasts since their inception had a long section on how the Queen and indeed her father had communicated their deep Christian faith through the Christmas broadcast. Now, it may not have escaped your notice that the theme I picked for this morning could have been taken from the Royal Christmas broadcast this year. But I did write it first. I want you to know before I'd heard the broadcast. But it's rather interesting to have it echoed in that broadcast on Christmas Day. But there was a good section of that programme just talking with a clergyman, just talking about the Queen, the way she expressed her faith in her Christmas broadcasts. There was an email publicity shot that I got for a hotel that opened its promotion with a picture of a nativity scene with the Christ child front and centre. That really encouraged me. You know, so often people have tried to banish the nativity pictures from the Christmas story, you know, from the Christmas messages. And our welfare, in our welfare where we live, our village where we live, a neighbour just across the road got well excited by our carol singing when we went round from the church and sung in the streets. And he came up to me with his phone the other day and said, "Listen to this, it was really good, it was really good." And it did actually sound quite presentable. He said, "I'm going to go, I haven't been to this church ever since I've lived in the village here." He said, "But as a youngster, I used to go to church. I was a choir boy and I was an altar boy and all that sort of thing. He said, but I haven't been to church for years, but I'm going to go on Christmas Eve this year for the carol singing at the church." And he said, "And the neighbour next door is coming as well." That I was sad not to be there on Christmas Eve because it'd been really good to welcome. Little encouragements. Jesus asked us to be light and to position ourselves on hilltops so that we are seen by all. Often it might seem that no one is looking. But let's not underestimate the light that is our Lord Jesus. The indication in Scripture is that just a little over 500 people physically saw the risen Jesus. That's probably about the aggregate of the church congregations of Evesham. Obviously not today, but on another Sunday. And on a regular Sunday, probably about the aggregate of that. So, hey, is it possible that the church can transform Evesham, got to be, hasn't it? Taught to Trust, our network of local groups, many more than 500, probably well over 1,000 meet each month. Can we have an impact on the world of blind and partially sighted people and people losing their sight? You bet. For certain we can. Don't underestimate the light. The light shining out from this church into this community. Yes, Jesus addressed large crowds, but most of his ministry was with small groups, with individuals, often one-to-one, with people who were marginalised and despised. To be light, we don't need a big audience. One will do, especially if they're living in the darkness, for the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. Jesus brought light. Jesus brought hope and confidence to his people. Does so today. Paul wrote these words to the Corinthian church: "For God, who said, 'Let light shine out of darkness,' made his light shine in our hearts to give us the light of the knowledge of God's glory displayed in the face of Christ." The light has come to the darkness. The darkness has not overcome it. Don't underestimate the light as we enter 2016 and set out again to be light to the world, light to Evesham, light to blind, partially sighted people through Torch, light in many other ministries. Let's be confident in our Christian faith. Let's be clear and open. Let's display that light as it were from the hilltop. Let's not hide away. Let's wear our Christian faith openly in our community. The light that is eternal, it is transcendent, it does overcome. May God bless you and your families this Christmas time, what's left of it, and into the new year. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it.